The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. This is a program of reason. It is one of quiet and detailed introspection on issues. This is the one program on the air for progressive minds. That's not Democrat, Republican, conservative, or liberal, progressive. People who are independent and looking for the truth, and especially at a time when we need the truth, when everything is interconnected. And therefore, by missing the piece of the puzzle that you never thought was relevant, then you don't see the whole scheme of things. For example, when the Democrats and Republicans both allow a new food safety bill to be implemented, the actual language in the bill would virtually allow our food to come under Homeland Security and allowing them to stop all organic farming and hold you responsible if you were eating any or buying any. It would be no different than if you went out to buy heroin today. How could that happen? Why isn't the media covering it? We're going to talk about that. Today I have three short commentaries, and then I'm going to ask you to give your input after you hear these commentaries. From Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, a man who I have an enormous amount of respect for because he's very insightful. And his commentary is on the importance of impotence of election. Americans are out of work, out of income, out of homes, and out of hope. They're out of luck. There's no happy ending to this story. Get ready for the big fall, the big smackdown to the average American. You made the mistake of not looking carefully at what you were voting for. Sheer anger allowed those to manipulate you, many of the Tea Party and the Republicans and Democrats. Then David DeGraw, the midterm election further demonstrates the need for revolution. And from Rabbi Michael Lerner, a man who I have an enormous amount of respect for, 10 Commandments to Revive Progressives After This Defeat. And I'll share all those with you with my own input, and then I'll ask you for your response. My guest in the second part of our program is David Freeman. You probably have never heard of David Freeman. He is a scholar. He is a science investigative journalist. And he's written for The Atlantic and Harvard Business Review and New York Times. And he's going to talk about why experts keep failing us. From scientific experts, medical experts, health officials, economists, physicians, consultants, they're almost always wrong. How did that happen? So today, why your physician, why people in the healthcare field are almost always wrong? And what does it say about those of us who are virtually always right? Go back over the last 35 years and look at 326 separate, original, in-depth investigative reports and ask yourself, show me one of those was inaccurate or wrong. But unfortunately, not one of those caused the mainstream media nor the health community to change. So that should be a wake-up call that we can no longer trust anything in establishment. The media is not on our side. The Democrats and Republicans are not. Not only are they not on our side, they are against us. And therefore, there is the laws of unintended consequences. They didn't mean to cause people to be thrown out of their homes, but the consequences of getting money to the banks, not to the people, to save their homes, caused that. They didn't mean for your child to end up with diabetes at the age of 6, adult diabetes, and be obese. They didn't mean that. They don't want to see your child hurt and suffer, but the consequence is supporting the food industry, the big franchises, the pizzas, the hamburgers, the hot dogs, the sugar, the refined confections. What do you think the consequence would be? The entire failure of our educational system. I'm embarrassed at how stupid children are today. And it's not the children's fault. It's the teachers, the parents, the principals, the school boards, the unions. They're to blame. But we can never accept blame. Our society does not allow people to accept blame. So how do we learn? How do we grow? Do we wait for wise men and women to emerge? No, we do not. This was told to me many years ago, about 15 years ago, while walking on the beach at Santa Monica with the Nobel Prize winner, Dr. Kerry Mullis, for a film on AIDS. And he stopped and he turned to me and he said, Gary, if you believe that anywhere in America, there's a group of wise men and women working on solutions to what ails us, you are living in delusion. He was right. So we must become the wise men and women who find our way. That's our program, the latest always on health and nutrition. Now, I know a lot of people in this audience are overweight or struggling with weight. And also, there's a way to affect your brain chemistry and your appetite naturally. Some people find that they really struggle. They do portion control. They try to select the right combinations. But they still end up feeling addicted to certain foods. According to the latest scientific findings, you're right. And a novel natural intervention can now help you. You have not heard this before. You haven't heard it on any other radio program. I know you haven't heard it on any of the other natural health shows because those people are more interested in getting you into their office. Come to my office. Come to my office. Bring a checkbook. Add some zeros. And I'll see you. Yeah. Lots of luck there. Actually, if they would spend a little time studying the scientific literature, they would have had this story. Here's what it is. No drug exists that can regulate appetite and induce weight loss without significant health risks. Some have proven disastrous. It was only after the lethal FDA-approved FenFen drugs were shown to cause pulmonary hypertension and heart valve disease that the FDA was forced to withdraw it. But it tells you something about how the FDA knew in advance that the drug was dangerous and still approved it. That shows you how corrupt the FDA is. Well, the exciting news is that a natural appetite regulator has been identified that operates at the neurochemical level to help provoke satiety, meaning that feeling of being full. It's derived from saffron. Have you ever seen saffron? It's the most expensive herb in the world. Just a tiny little bit of those little hair-like red or orange pieces could run you $10. And it's been prized for centuries, not only as a spice, but also as a mood enhancer. All you had to do is look at the Ayurvedic literature and the Chinese literature. It's been there. We now know that saffron has a capacity to boost serotonin. Now, serotonin is a neurotransmitter whose role in appetite and satiety is well established. And a team of French researchers uncovered the ability of saffron to dramatically increase feelings of hunger between meals and to decrease it, I should say, so you don't feel hungry, so you're not going to snack. More often than not, it's not the meal for many Americans who are conscious about their diet that cause the problems. It's what happens when you get hungry in between, where you may have taken your time and energy to produce a good meal. How likely it is that you're going to eat a healthy snack? Most people don't. They eat unhealthy snacks. So what they found was just 88 milligrams twice a day of a standardized saffron extract was effective in modulating the underlying psychological factors that make you eat more than you want, and it had no side effects. Now, although this precise neurochemical mechanism of actions were confirmed only this year, only recently the fundamental psychiatric nature of what some experts call emotional eating has received critical validation in abundance with some new studies. When severe enough, it reaches the level of compulsion, a clinical diagnosable anxiety-related disorder, and compulsive eating occurs almost in 30% of all overweight women. Although its prevalence in the general population greatly exceeds that number, and it strongly correlates with poor impulse control and depression and relapse following weight loss. And in keeping with anecdotal observation, research shows its victims tend to gravitate towards sweet, non-nutritious foods like candy and ice cream and cake. In one of the most compelling findings on emotional eating to date, Dutch researchers reported this year that compulsive eating can result from a common gene variant for the molecule that transports serotonin, one of the body's primary mood regulators. People carrying this gene suffer from low serotonin activity, predisposing them to depression and anxiety, especially under stress. The Dutch study revealed that teens carrying this gene indulge in emotional eating at a very high rate. Now, antidepressants are not the answer, in my opinion, for anything. I see no reason to put anyone on an antidepressant. The side effects are terrible, and there's never, ever been any proof that antidepressants, by any gold standard, really work and are safe. And they're also costly, and they cause everything from suicidal thoughts to sexual dysfunction. So thanks to the team of French scientists, a next-generational natural alternative has come to light, and that's saffron. It's been used in traditional Persian medicine for centuries as treatment for insomnia and anxiety, and French researchers set out to corroborate their therapeutic effects and apply them to the treatment of eating disorders. And they conducted a placebo-controlled double-blind study where they gave saffron extract to a small group of healthy to slightly overweight women, 46 to 61 years of age, and they lost 4 pounds in 4 weeks, but everything else stayed the same. And more strikingly, the team showed a significant decline in feeling hungry in between meals. So that's the latest on saffron. In fact, they did 50% better than the placebo group. And then there's a connection to depression. Based upon the findings of the team, it's been proposed that saffron extracts can inhibit serotonin reuptake in synapses. And inhibiting synaptic serotonin reuptake keeps this mood-elevating neurotransmitter in the brain longer, and that means you're going to feel better, and that means you can combat depression. So just a little history now on saffron. Saffron's been used for a long time, and it's been used in a safe way. There is no adverse side effects, and it works by boosting the level of serotonin, reducing depression, reducing anxiety, helping compulsive eating, and it's also as effective as a tricyclic antidepressant and a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor like a fluoxetine or Prozac. No side effects. So now, there's something for all the psychologists, psychiatrists, behavioralists, nutritionists, dietitians in this audience. Something brand new. No one else has had it. I wanted to share it with you. So this way, we're not going to have a seesaw in people saying, well, I'm trying to diet, but then I snack and I get hungry. What do I do? So that's the deal. All right? Good information there all the way around. And one final thing, while people are saying there is no association between nutrition and politics, everything about nutrition is politics. Here's the latest from Life Extension. Quote, pharmaceutical companies are once again interfering with your ability to access information about dietary supplements. The Senate is debating a bill that will enable the FDA to put vitamin supplement makers in jail for 10 years if they cite quality, peer-reviewed, published scientific studies on the label of their dietary supplements or their website. The pretext for this draconian proposal is a bill titled Food Safety Bill S-3767. It's the Food Safety Accountability Act, 3767. The ostensible purpose of the bill is to punish anyone who knowingly contaminates food for sale. And since there are already strong laws to punish anyone who commits this crime, this bill serves no purpose other than enriching pharmaceutical interest. The sinister scheme behind this bill is to exploit the public's concern about food safety. Drug companies want to convince your senators that an overreaching law needs to be enacted to grant the FDA powers to define food contamination any way it chooses. Even today, the FDA can proclaim a dietary supplement as misbranded, even if the best science in the world is used to describe its biological effects in the body. The concern is that the FDA will use the term misbranded in the same way it defines adulterated in order to jail dietary supplement makers as if they were selling contaminated food. So that one more reason to call your legislator, write your legislator, you have two senators, and let them know, saying no to Senate Bill 3767. No to Senate Bill 3767. Once again, leave it to the pharmaceutical industry and all of its lobbyists to make it impossible, then, if this goes through, get any quality information about any nutrient. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment and giving you some commentaries, and then short commentaries, and then I want your response. This is the number one listened to health program in the world and has been for 35 years. And this is also the number one listened to program for independent progressive minds. Welcome all of you for taking your time. I take nothing for granted. Every day, dozens of hours in preparation for all of our work, all the different scholars and residents, researchers, to make sure that you're getting quality information that no one else has. And I'm going to have three short commentaries. I would like you to call in and respond afterwards. My guest coming in about 20 minutes from now will be David Freeman, and a conversation you have not heard anywhere. This is a first, and he is a scholar, and he's going to show why the experts keep getting everything wrong, why they're failing us. We've been telling you that for a long time, and we'll have that conversation. One quick special. We had people calling asking about it because it hadn't been on sale for about a year. This is our special, and it's a real good special. It's my detox product, and I put everything into this product that I feel will make a difference in your body. It's a kosher product. It's in vegetarian capsules. You take two of these at night before you go to bed. Now, here's what's in them, and ask yourself, imagine what this is doing to your DNA in a good way. Imagine what this is doing to the toxins in your body that you don't want, that we produce naturally every day, and that also we can be exposed to in a myriad of ways. And that's why I created this. Listen carefully, and you tell me, do you have this? Broccoli powder, 200 milligrams of the glycosides. That's a lot of broccoli powder, and you know how powerful broccoli powder and broccoli sprouts? This is even more concentrated by a substantial margin. Chlorophyll, 200 milligrams. Last night, we had a wonderful group of people in our studio to start our Healing the Brain Naturally lifestyle and behavior modification 6-month support group. They're getting all their blood workups and their blood chemistries done, the impedance and blood pressure, and all the doctors were there last night to get them started. And I think we're going to have some amazing results. Well, I told them one of the very first things they have to do is understand you've got to stop all the things causing inflammation, and then you have to start eliminating and then detoxing. And what's my number one thing I tell people? Chlorophyll, 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 chlorophyll. It is the ultimate detoxifier. So 200 milligrams is a lot of chlorophyll. And then there's something you never get. Wasabi japonica root. That is the strongest wasabi I know of. Then you hear me talk about turmeric and curcumin, 95% curcumin, 275 milligrams. Right there, if you went into a store and asked for broccoli powder, 200 milligrams, with glycosides, chlorophyll, 200 milligrams, wasabi, 30 milligrams, and turmeric powder at 95% curcumin at 275 milligrams, you're probably talking about almost $80 to $100 right there. But I'm just getting started. Then stilingula root, red clover flower heads, peppermint leaf, burdock root, cascara sigillaria bark, chrysanthemums, dandelion, fennel seed, fiber from apple, garlic, cloves, ginger root, golden seal, hibiscus flower, kelp, licorice root, marshmallow leaf, orange peel, Oregon grapefruit, prickly ash bark, a rose hip fruit, sarsaparilla root, yellow dock, buckthorn bark, and apple pectin. You put all that together, and there is nothing I know of in the world that could compete or compare for something you can do at home to detoxify. And it's called detox. Here's the deal. You buy one, you get one free, plus, in addition to that, you also get your choice of a $40 or a $30 book. You either get a Power Healing, Living in the Moment, or Natural Pet Care as an extra gift. Call 877-637-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. All the money goes to this nonprofit station. So you're going to get one detox, you're going to get one free, and you're going to get a book of your choice free. And if you have those three books, I'm sure we'll find one that you don't have. Oh, by the way, thank you very much for the fellow, and by the way, to show you about the economy of scale and what you get when you get berry blast. A guy came up to me the other day, and he gave me this jar, and it was on my desk, and it's resveratrol. And it's a high-quality product and from Jarro. It's a very good product, and it retails for $40. Well, he held up the bottle of berry blast, and he said, "You realize I get the same amount in each serving?" I said, "Yeah, I know that." He said, "Well, how'd you do that?" Because I went through all the different things in here, the acai berry, and I looked at how much you gave and how much I pay for it if I bought it individually, and I'm saving over $100. I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, thank you." He said, "It's one way to get all the different really important super nutrients at an enormous savings." I said, "Yeah. But it's nice to know someone does their homework and sees what we've been doing for them." Now some commentaries. And then your feedback, please, by calling us on our call band line at 888-874-4888. From Dr. Paul Craig Roberts from Global Research. Oh, by the way, last night in the studio, so everyone can see, I have, it's our broadcast studio where we produce all the lectures and the sets for our documentaries. It's over on 92nd Street. I had, these are 500 watt lights, are very bright. And someone came up to me, was asking me a question, look up my forehead, says, "It's true, you got all this new hair growing." I said, "Yeah, I do." So for those of you who can take a look, I have 500 watts of light here in the studio. Of course, no makeup. Take a look at the forehead, and then go back and look at pictures. You will not see that hair. All new hair. And I'm working on this whole new protocol, and I'm going to give that protocol to people in a new health support group, but not for another month, because this is, has to get off the ground. This is a really detailed one. The next health support group will be a general one, but this is very specific. But if you notice, all new hair, and I'm showing you how my hair is growing from a crew cut. 8 weeks ago, I had a crew cut. In the back, it was under an eighth of an inch. Already, I have a half inch in the last 3 weeks on top. So it's all filling in. And so you can look at the video on progressiveradionetwork.com and or GaryNoll.com, and you can see for yourself. And the skin's smooth as can be, no wrinkles, because what rejuvenates the hair rejuvenates the skin. And what rejuvenates the hair and skin rejuvenates your DNA. So your whole body starts to rejuvenate. This whole idea that somehow we have to get sick and become decrepit and wrinkled and saggy and baggy and weak. No, not true. Unless you allow it. From Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, in historical novel, The Leopard, I remember seeing that as a film with Burt Lancaster, Giuseppe Lampedusa writes that things have to change in order to remain the same. That is what happened in the U.S. congressional elections on November 2nd. Jobs offshoring, which began on a large scale with the collapse of the Soviet Union, has merged the Democrats and Republicans to one party with two names. The Soviet collapse changed attitudes in socialist India and communist China and opened those countries with their large excess supplies of labor to America. Pushed by Wall Street and Walmart, American manufacturers moved production for U.S. markets offshore to boost profits and shareholder earnings by utilizing cheap labor. The decline of the U.S. manufacturing workforce reduced the political power of unions and the ability of unions to finance the Democratic Party. The end result was to make the Democrats dependent on the same sources of financing as Republicans. Prior to this development, the two parties, despite their similarities, represented differing interests and served as a check on one another. The Democrats represented labor and focused on providing a social safety net, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, food stamps, unemployment insurance, housing subsidies, education, civil rights. These were Democratic issues. Democrats were committed to a full employment policy and would accept some inflation to secure more employment. The Republicans represented business. The Republicans focused on curtailing big government in all of its manifestations, from social welfare spending to regulation. The Republicans' economic policy consisted of opposing federal budget deficits. These differences resulted in political competition. Today, both parties are dependent on campaign finance on Wall Street, the military security complex, IPAC, that's the Jewish lobby, the oil industry, agribusiness, pharmaceuticals, and the insurance industry. Campaigns no longer consist of debates over issues. They are mud-slinging contests. Angry voters take their anger out on incumbents, and that is what we saw in the election. Tea Party candidates defeated Republican incumbents in primaries, and Republicans defeated Democrats in congressional elections. Policies, however, will not change. Republicans will be more inclined to be more rapidly in dismantling more of the social safety net than Democrats, and more inclined to finish off the remnants of civil liberties. But the powerful private oligarchs will continue to write the legislation that Congress passes and the President signs. New members of Congress will quickly discover that achieving re-election requires bending to the oligarchs' will. This might sound harsh and pessimistic, but look at the factual record. In his campaign for presidency, George Bush criticized President Clinton's foreign adventures and vowed to curtail America's role as the policeman of the world. But once in office, President Bush pursued the neoconservatives' policy of U.S. world domination by military means, occupation of countries, setting up puppet governments, and financial intervention in other countries' elections. Obama promised change. He vowed to close Guantanamo prison, to bring the troops home. Instead, President Obama restarted the war in Afghanistan and started new wars in Pakistan and Yemen, while continuing Bush's policy of threatening Iran and encircling Russia with military bases. Americans out of work, out of income, out of homes, and out of prospects, and out of hope for their children's careers are angry. But the political system offers them no way of bringing about change. They can change the elected servants of the oligarchs, but they cannot change the policies or the oligarchs. The American situation is fatal. As a result of the high-speed internet, the loss of manufacturing jobs was followed by the loss of professional service jobs, such as software engineering, that were career ladders for American university graduates. The middle class has no prospects. Already, the American labor force and income distribution mimics that of a third world country, with income and wealth concentrated in a few hands at the top and most of the rest of the population employed in domestic service jobs. In recent years, net new job creation has been concentrated in lowly paid occupations such as waitresses and bartenders, ambulatory healthcare services, and retail clerks. The population and new entrants into the workforce continues to grow more rapidly than job opportunities. Turning this around would require more realization than exists among policy makers in a deeper crisis. Possibly it could be done by using taxation to encourage U.S. corporations to manufacture domestically the goods and services that they sell in U.S. markets. However, the global corporations and Wall Street would oppose this change. The tax revenue loss from job losses, bank bailouts, stimulus programs, and the wars have caused a 3- to 4-fold jump in the U.S. budget deficit. The deficit is now too large to be financed by the trade surpluses of China, Japan, and OPEC. Consequently, the Federal Reserve is making massive purchases of Treasury and other debt. The continuation of these purchases threatens the dollar's value and its role as a reserve currency. If the dollar is perceived as losing that role, flight from dollars will devastate the remnants of America's retirement incomes and the ability of the U.S. government to finance itself. We are bankrupt. Yet the destructive policies continue. There is no re-regulation of the financial industry because the financial industry will not allow it. The unaffordable wars continue because they serve the profits of the military security complex and promote military officers into higher ranks with more retirement pay. Elements within the government want to send the U.S. troops to Pakistan and Yemen. War with Iran is still on the table, and China is being demonized as a cause of all of our problems. Whistleblowers and critics are being suppressed. Military personnel who leak evidence of military crimes are themselves arrested. Congressmen now call for the execution of anyone who's a whistleblower in the military. WikiLeaks founder is in hiding, and neoconservatives write articles calling for his killing by CIA assassination teams. Media outlets that report the leaks apparently have been threatened by Pentagon Chief Robert Gates. According to Antiwar.com, on July 29th, Gates, quote, insisted that he would not rule out targeting, meaning assassinating, Julian Assange or any of the myriad media outlets which reported the leaks. The control of the oligarchs extends to the media. The Clinton administration permitted a small number of mega corporations to concentrate the U.S. media in a few hands. Corporate advertising executives, not journalists, control the new American media, and the value of the mega companies depends on government broadcast licenses. The media's interest is now united with that of the government and the oligarchs. On top of all the other factors that have made America elections meaningless, voters cannot even get correct information from the media about the problems that they and the country face. As the economic situation is likely to continue deteriorating, the anger will grow. But the oligarchs will direct the anger away from themselves and towards the vulnerable elements of the domestic population and call them foreign enemies. Your thoughts on that? I'd like to hear what you have to say. The others I will deal with on another program because I'm looking at the clock. In the studio right now is Kara Lee. Hi, Kara.
Good afternoon, Gary. Well, I just wanted to start off saying we've got a couple opportunities for people to volunteer and help us out in the next couple days. Starting off on Tuesday, we're going to need a couple volunteers at 4 o'clock, people preferably with vans, to help drive Gary and some video equipment to Rutgers University, where Gary will be giving a lecture there.
No, they have to be here at 1:30. We're taking our whole film crew over. It's going to be a 5-camera shoot. It's a big deal.
Okay, great. Well, even more people then, and at 1:30, coming to our Upper West Side location at 83rd and Broadway, 2307 Broadway, if you are able to help drive and help transport equipment, please give Michael a call at the office. His phone number is 646-926-5434. Again, you can reach Michael at 646-926-5434.
It's going to be a big lecture. It's packed. I was told they have 1,000 people, though, as much as the room would hold, and that's why I didn't announce it to the audience. But it's going to be a very important lecture because I'm going to take on the entire educational system and its failure. And I'm also going to challenge the movie I just saw, which I thought was a pure propaganda piece about
film?
Waiting for Superman.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it was just, you could drive a truck through its biases. But I'm going to be talking about a lot of different things there. And one other thing before you go, and we go to our guest who's standing by, David Friedman, we're going to talk about how all the so-called experts continue to get it wrong and why we continue to accept them as experts. And yet the people who get things right, we never hear about. In any case, I think it's time that we began to organize volunteers to work on programs that can be important for the future. It requires research and dissemination, whether that information is up as a series of articles online or documentaries. For example, there has never been a documentary on the World Trade Organization. And yet behind all of our food and supplements, everything that involves the trade is the World Trade Organization. Well, who are these people? No one knows. Well, what? They have absolute power. And we're signatory to that. That means their rules supersede our own rules. So an investigation, maybe a documentary. And also I thought a documentary on who owns our Congress. And by extension, everything that Congress does. A really objective look, not at the legislators. We know about them. And we know how they vote. And we know where they get their money. At least some of them. But who are the people in the industries that have the greatest influence? The pharmaceutical industry, the agricultural industry, the energy cartels, the military-industrial security complex. People hear these names, but they don't know what it means. It's like saying 27,000 children died yesterday from waterborne illnesses around the world. True, but it means nothing. But if you have one child who is trapped in a cave, the whole world waits. So we have to bring it down to something that is showing people. Here are the people who want to control your lives and have been able to. Who are they? What have they done? And bring in ethicists, bring in historians to put all of it into context. I believe now the next set of research reports, next sets of documentaries and specials have to focus upon the people who are behind the scenes. And no one's been doing this. We need to do it. They've made too many issues into nothing more than mental trivia, and no one's covering the people, the oligarchs, and people behind the power players behind the scenes. So what I want to do is I want to have a meeting here on Saturday at noon for people who would like to volunteer to be a part of this. And I'm going to be trying to organize all the different progressive groups and individuals to work together, to cooperate, to share information, to have everyone say, what is your most important issue? And put it on the table and then look to see what is the most important two or three issues. Then have people who will start to volunteer. This is going to be a time project. It's not going to happen overnight, but we have to start. Otherwise, all we have are the Democrat and Republicans and the media controlling the Democrat and Republicans, and the rest of us are left out. So people who want to be a part of this should call you.
Yeah, you can give me a call at 646-926-5428, 646-926-5428. And I believe the meeting will be here at 2307 Broadway at noon on Saturday. But you can actually do the research and work at home after the meeting, correct, Gary?
Yes, they can.
Okay, sure. And again, you can give me a call, 646-926-5428.
Thank you. Back in a moment with my guest, David Friedman. Please stay with us.
I remember my first love affair. Somehow or another, the whole darn thing went wrong. But my mama had some great advice, so I thought I'd put it in the words of this song. I can still hear her saying, boy, 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 I see you sitting out there all alone, crying your eyes out, 'cause the woman that you love is gone. Oh, it's gonna be get up off your knees, cause only the strong survive. That's what she said, only the strong survive. Only the strong survive. Yeah, you gotta be strong. You better hold on. Don't go around with your head hung down. Well, I wouldn't let the little girl know.
And we're back. By the way, we just lost the video feed. We'll try to correct that. My guest is David Friedman. I gave his introduction earlier in the show, but just to mention again, he is a science investigative journalist and writer, contributor to Inc. Magazine, Atlantic, Newsweek, Science, and the Harvard Business Review and New York Times. He is the author of Wrong, Why Experts Keep Failing Us, which explores how and why scientists and medical researchers and health officials and economists and physicians, consultants generate and rely upon bad data in science. Nice to have you with us today, David.
Great to be here.
I'd like to begin with you sharing something about the medical doctor and researcher, John Ioannidis in Greece, who is perhaps the world's most renowned deconstructor of bad medical science that now permeates medicine and even decisions on drug approvals and health policies, and put in context the fact that scientists are so often wrong in their conclusions and yet continue to embrace their pseudo-facts like teddy bears, while in fact diseases are increasing rapidly and there are very few cures to show for the hundreds of billions of dollars that have been spent cumulatively in all these areas, and yet the conventional medicine and the experts are constantly used as the final arbiters in what is true, irrespective of how many times they've been wrong.
Well, we do have a real problem here, and as you point out, Dr. John Ioannidis has really done a great job in bringing a lot of this to light. Now, Ioannidis is himself a scientist. He's a physician. He, in many ways, is very much a member of the mainstream science community and medical community, but he is one of those people in the community who has really taken it upon himself to take a look at what the community doesn't know. And does its claims sort of add up to what it can really do? And the answer is clearly no. That medicine, medical research, has not been producing mostly right answers. It's been producing mostly wrong answers. Now, in fact, most people in the medical community sort of knew this anyway, some more than others, but Ioannidis made it really difficult to try to duck it or try to minimize it. It's a real big problem, and most research turns out to be wrong. Some of it's pretty good, but most of it does turn out to be wrong. And Ioannidis believes that, as do many people in the medical community, that this information should get out. Medicine should not pretend that it knows more than it does. It's a real hard problem, and I think it affects all of us.
Let me just give you a few examples from my own background. I've broken over 300 stories in my career of 35 years as a journalist, broadcast journalist, and having a background in science as a PhD in human nutrition, public health science, and a research fellow at the Institute of Biology, I've had an opportunity to look for the truth and at least know the truth when I saw it or know deception when I saw it. And it started in the world of AIDS research. And there are just now almost 3,000 outstanding scientists, including multiple Nobel Prize winners, who state that much of what we've been told about AIDS science is flawed. Now, that's not to say AIDS-related illnesses are not real. They are, but everything else is wrong. The fact that we are told that lifestyle modification is not important, that drinking and drugs and all the rest that was originally there was not important, they were wrong, and the drugs would help. We had hundreds of thousands of deaths from AZT. In fact, I spoke with the chief scientist, or the chief observer, overseeing the science at one of the universities here in New York State, who came to me as a whistleblower with a large packet of documents saying this entire study is a fraud. It's unblinded. People who died taking AZT were excluded. So anyhow, I saw the letter sent to the FDA.
And the FDA simply dismissed them out of hand, even though this was their chief observer overseeing the study. And yet the people came out as the experts, whether it was journalists or medical doctors or scientists claiming AZT is the best thing you can take, and yet it was not. And today, any doctor giving the 1,300 to 1,500 milligrams that the original people were told to take would be disbarred from practicing medicine for malpractice. And yet not one of those people, all of whom, every single one, were wrong on matters of fact. None were ever to apologize. Never were any reprimanded. And the same is true in other areas where women were told to take synthetic hormone replacement therapy, and the so-called experts telling women to take this drug chose not to look at the literature showing that it increased the risk of heart attack, stroke, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and dementia, and yet they're still considered the experts. I just saw one on Fox talking about synthetic hormone replacement therapy, and I'm thinking, my goodness, the science clearly shows women shouldn't be taking this, and yet the so-called experts are always the only ones involved in allowing their opinion to be heard. Talk about this, please, this whole dynamic, the people who got it wrong, frequently with devastating effects, including on the in the economy, including Ben Bernanke, including Alan Greenspan, including all the, at one time Alan Greenspan said that he had, quote, hundreds of economists and bright young people and PhDs working for him. Well, then why is it you all got it wrong, and yet people who got it right are not invited on programs to talk about what they saw? The people who got it wrong are the ones who were asked to come back in and fix the problem. I'm amazed at this. Your thoughts?
It's a real big problem. I think at the heart of everything you're talking about, whether it's medicine or economics or parenting or any area that we look to experts to help us with, including our personal finances, what you're really looking at is a really complicated picture. And the fact is, no one really knows the answers because the answers are really hard. Every answer you could come up with is going to be true maybe sometimes for some people and not for others. And it's very, very hard to do studies and get good data. And even if you have good data, it's really hard to analyze it. And then, of course, everybody has biases, so they spin their stories. And so the result is, most of what we see out there really tends to be kind of bad advice. And sometimes if you look at this problem, it's easy to think, well, we're just kind of in a free-for-all situation where we just kind of have to guess at who's going to be right or ignore all the experts. And you know, I hate to leave people in that situation. And I don't think we have to be completely without expert advice. I think we all have to try to use our common sense and decide who might be doing the best job here, but just be a little careful about how much faith we want to put in the experts and beware of the fact that sometimes even when all the experts we hear about seem to agree and feel strongly about it, even then they often turn out to be wrong. We've seen this happen many times in all fields.
I appreciate that insight. Thank you. Let's take another look at medicine for a moment. I went to Germany to look at how it was that some German physicians were coming up with long-term survival from terminal cancer patients, including a Dr. Joseph Issels at a Tegernsee Lake clinic. I spent a long time there. I looked at, he had 55,000 patient records. I reviewed the records. I interviewed the patients. But then I asked, why is there a bias against this man by the American Cancer Society? He did not meet any criteria for being considered a quack. And yet the advice being given at the time was to use certain chemotherapy agents, 5-fluorouracil and adriamycin, cisplatin. And then I had a chance to look at a report that has never been released in the United States. It was by Professor Abel, a man with a background in both epidemiology and medical biostatistics. And he spent over 5 years and he reviewed 3,000 separate major chemotherapy studies from MD Anderson and all the other major clinics. And he found, and his conclusion, that there was no science to support chemotherapy for the vast majority of organic cancers being brain, prostate, pancreatic, stomach, colorectal, breast cancer. And he said in his conclusion that since the science did not support that it was extending the patient's life, then why were they using it? And he gave this speculative answer. It was the belief that the scientist or the physician had in it, not the science. So now we have people, 435,000 died last year only using orthodox therapy, and probably a little more this year will die. And yet, year in and year out, the same monies, more research will go, more drugs will be used. And all these so-called experts will convince people and their patients and the news media that, you know, we've got the answer. And I'm saying, no, we don't. And you all have had 40 years to come up with an answer, and you've spent over $600 billion, and all you have is a lot of toe tags, and yet they continue to have an absolute monopoly on policymaking and opinion leading. Your thoughts, please.
Well, it certainly has happened in medicine and in all fields that the field seemed to come to agreement on a certain kind of treatment, and that treatment turned out actually to cause more problems than it solved. We saw that through the 80s and early 90s with the treatment of choice, the drug given to people who showed up in emergency rooms with heart attacks that ended up killing tens of thousands of people. So this stuff really happens. You know, the problem, let me actually switch to physics for a second of all things, but I've done a lot of stories for the media about various physics, leading physics researchers and some of their incredibly interesting theories. And whenever that happens, I always get a certain amount of letters from people who believe they've discovered important new theories of physics. And I read some of these, and some of them really, you got to figure they must be from cranks. How could they possibly have come up with some giant new physics theory? But the fact is, Einstein himself was regarded as a little bit of a crank in the very, very beginning of his career when he came up with the theory of relativity. That original paper was rejected by the physics journal it was sent to, and it was only when he got support from other physicists capable of understanding what he was saying that he became accepted. So we really have to be careful who we reject as cranks. I think most people who seem like cranks probably will turn out to be cranks, but some of them won't. Some of them will know better than the mainstream, and that does happen at times, and I think what happens is, in a sense, we're making a bet on who we want to trust. I think most of the time when there's a mainstream consensus that has been building up over a long period of time, it's probably pretty good. But sometimes it turns out to be not so good, and once in a while it turns out to be disastrously wrong. And some of those naysayers that everyone called a crank turned out to be right. That happens sometimes. There's no getting around it. And that makes the medical mainstream and other mainstream fields very uncomfortable. But the fact is, it's just true, and it's a real difficult problem for all of us to deal with, and I think we all need to be aware of it and not try to hide it.
Well, David, let's use one more example then. During the meltdown, we heard from Wall Street and the Federal Reserve and the Treasury that none of them could have predicted the crash. They said that in a sworn testimony before Congress. It was just out of the economic model equations they relied upon and would like us to believe is objective science. What can you share with us about the discipline of economics in general and the kind of economic theory and beliefs that our financial officials and Wall Street rely upon?
Well, I think our common sense tells us what was going on there. I mean, these folks should have known better, and they say so now. Most of them will admit that. They blew it. They screwed up. Now, they say, well, this was outside of our equations. Well, yes, it was. And the obvious response is, why are we relying on those equations? They never should have. And like I said, most of them will actually admit it. Those equations, the people who came up with those equations, and most of the smart people who followed them, were told and knew from day one that those equations had a lot of uncertainties in them and were only good within certain limits that were exceeded by reality in this case. So experts often rely on models. They rely on certain types of data. They get very comfortable with it, and they get very comfortable making predictions and telling us what's going on based on those models.
David, hold your thoughts one second.
They know better.
We're going to say goodbye to WMYE. Continue listening over the Progressive Radio Network. David, let's go a little further with that.
Sure.
Can we say at any level that it wouldn't have mattered what model they were working from when you get into a feeding frenzy over excessive profits, especially in derivatives and credit default swaps and playing and naked shorting or shorting the market, that you're in a world of your own, completely alienated from the average person that goes to work, puts in their 40 hours or 35 or 45 hours, gets their paycheck. These individuals had a way of making money that not even the robber barons, the Vanderbilts, the Swear Engines, the Hills, the Goulds, the Grants, the Rockefellers could have imagined. Some of these people made more money last year than the Rockefeller Empire made in 30 years.
I think you're right when you say that these people were operating in a realm that is far distant from how most of us operate. That's absolutely undeniable. And the fact of the matter is that often people who get the most done or who seem to be accomplishing the most, even if it turns out to be a very bad thing, as it did in this case, are often operating sort of at the boundaries of what we know will work and what we think might be good or bad for us. In other words, they're working with stuff where no one quite knows what might happen, and they're taking advantage of that, and I think they did in this case. Now, I mean, many people make the argument that the fact that there are people who can move money around this way is good for the economy, and if they want to get their chunk of it, so be it. I'm not sure I agree with that, but the point of the matter is there are serious risks when people are moving around large sums of money using leading-edge techniques that really nobody fully understands, and we should be aware, and we should be open about the fact that there are a lot of unknowns here, and there are risks. If we understand the risks, we can make intelligent decisions about what might be worth the risk and what isn't. It's when we don't understand the risks or hide them that we really run into trouble.
I agree with that. My only concern is that more often than not, our ability to understand a risk and keep it in proper context is guided by a so-called expert who is not held accountable if the risk we take is on their advice and they make the wrong call. David Friedman, thank you very much. It's a very important book, Wrong: Why Experts Keep Failing Us, an important work by David Friedman, a very outstanding science investigative journalist, business investigative journalist, who has put together a book that we need to read, Why Medical Researchers, Physicians, Health Officials, and Economists Keep Creating Faulty Science or Relying Upon Faulty Science and Facts. And it's necessary to read this now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's say hello to some of the people who called in before the end of the show. Let's say hello to Eric from New York City.
Hey, Gary. How are you?
Good, Eric.
Excellent. I just wanted to share a few thoughts about exposing this information that we're hearing from you and all the wonderful people on PRN. Have you ever considered doing some kind of you ever seen those infomercials where they have what the pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know or what the government doesn't want you to know?
Well, first of all, I disagree with that. I believe that you can say what you wish in the American media. There are more than ample opportunity. Many of the people doing infomercials, including Kevin Trudeau, are out and out wrong, and he has exploited that to the max. This is a man who is a convicted felon who spent time in prison for defrauding people, and I remember being in Boston at the time, and I guess he was just there, and I said, I wish you would have given me an opportunity to debate him. I'd never met him, but he was making all these claims about coral calcium, and I said, coral calcium, calcium carbonate is one of the most poorly absorbed calciums, and he's getting people to do something, and it's wrong. So I'm not a fan of Kevin Trudeau, even though he's used my name in his books, but he had this book, and I read it. There was nothing in it. And so it's just another form of exploitation. So the infomercial is not the way. If you want to help the American people at this very important time, and I'm not saying that this is going to be immediately reversed. It will not be. But please let us not make the same mistake we did when we threw Ralph Nader under the bus for Al Gore. Now, I gave you a detailed description of all the things why I opposed Al Gore. I gave you his voting record. I gave you his financial support. I showed you how he was a part of taking away the program for the poor, for children, and opening up the forest for exploitation, wouldn't sign off on the anti-land personnel mines. I listed 55 things that he did wrong that the Democrats chose to overlook, and yet Ralph Nader did 287 things right and created more laws to protect us and keep corporate America from becoming monopolies and trusts in any other person in the history of the American political system. And yet he was no member of Congress. That's the power he had. But why? Because he had Dr. Cindy Wolf and Dr. Michael Jacobson and other individuals around him at a time where America was willing to take on the excesses and corruption within the American corporate elite. Today, we do not have that, with the exception of progressives like Chris Hedges and others, but they are not working together. There's no collection of quality minds coming together. It's time that we did so now. That's why I'm asking people to meet. Let us start to work in voluntary ways to bring all of these disparate groups of independent and progressive minds together. Look at what we need to change, but do not try to change it within the Republican or Democratic framework, because you'll be grossly compromised and you will be neutered. You cannot rely upon at one time what I am, a historical Democrat and a liberal. I no longer am a Democrat. I am an independent and a progressive. I see the change we need to help all people coming from people who are not aligned with the ideology that is so rigid that it takes not into consideration the needs of the average person. So we need to work, and we need to start now. That's what I would suggest. Thank you for your call. Mike Fader's up now on the Progressive Radio Network. Hi, Mike. What are you going to talk about today?
Well, I was going to talk about the election, but I think I might better serve people. First of all, I want to say that I completely agree with what you just said. The Democratic and Republican Party have to be abandoned, and we have to concentrate every effort, which is what I'm going to do on anything I'm on the radio about, to a third, you know, alternative. But today I was going to talk about the elections. I think maybe I should fall back on what I do best in terms of helping people. If I look at the world from an individual story basis, sometimes I'm able to bring more inspiration and help that way than to rant about politics. So I think, you know.
Well, because not only is all politics local, but all human
exactly.
change is personal.
Exactly.
And that's one of the reasons you're one of those popular radio programs on the air, because you tell us your life, your issues, your challenges, your changes, and people relate to it. And I think it's a very important way that we have to start all over, instead of looking at the superstars like Obama or Clinton or Gore.
I agree.
And
all
John
this celebrity and macro stuff is just not happening.
Do you notice they never personalize anything?
No.
We never get to see what's really behind them, their weaknesses. They're afraid to be vulnerable,
mm-hmm.
because on the one hand, we say in America, tell us the truth, and the moment you do, you're used, you're exploited for your truth.
I was on vacation once down in the island someplace, and I was taking a cab back to the airport, and there was a sermon. It was on Sunday, a preacher, and the name of the sermon was, and this is the refrain every time he said something, tell the truth and get in trouble.
Yeah.
And it was a question and an answer at the same time. So
we look forward. Please, everyone, stay tuned to Mike Fader right here on the Progressive Radio Network.
Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee. And with every